Chazor Shem Sechsbov Karim Perek Hei Mishne Zayin until Perek Ches Mishne Vov. The end of Perek Hei told us that even though the Torah, when talking about goring or an animal falling into a pit and different anachs like that, even though it specifies a specific animal, usually a shur, an ox, or a donkey, sometimes it might specify a behemoth, a domesticated animal, nevertheless, all these things really apply to all animals. It just mentions those specific animals because those are the most common animals in that case. For example, it's most common for an ox to gore, but if other animals gore, they would also be chayv. The owner would be chayv to pay, etc. And the Mishnah listed eight examples of these things where the Torah specifies a specific animal. However, the halachas apply to all animals. So number one, if the animal falls into a pit, it applies to all animals. And also when the Jews were told to distance all the animals from Har Sinai just before the Torah was given, that applies to all animals. Number three, if one steals an animal, paying tashlumei cheifa, which is double the value back to the owner. Number four, if you find it, to do hashavas aveda, to return the lost item, the lost animal in this case, the owner. Number five, helping the owner unload the animal. That's a mitzvah in the Torah. Number six, it's forbidden to muzzle the animal while it's doing the work in the field. While it's doing the work, it should be able to eat part of what it's working on. Number seven, the prohibition to have two different animals, different species, plowing together with the same plow. So one will be stronger, etc. And number eight, shavisas behemto, which is not allowing your animals to do malach on Shabbos. Just like you're not allowed to break Shabbos, so too you have to make sure that your animals are not breaking Shabbos, as it were. The first half of Perek Vov goes back to discussing one of the four avos nezikin, the four categories of damage, and that is shur, which even though literally means ox, like we just saw, it also means any animal. And remember, that's split into three, keren, shein, and regel. So the first half of this perek discusses shein and regel, eating and walking on things and damaging in that way. So the Mishnah told us that how much you have to guard the animal in order to prevent it from doing damage. So because an animal is always a mu'ud, it's always considered prone to do damage for shein and regel. So we saw previously there was actually a machloikes about what level of guarding you need for different things, but we, in this Mishnah went according to the opinion that said if an animal is a muad, then you only need a low-level guarding. That's known as a shmiya p'chusa. So since shein and regel are always a muad, so a low-level guarding is always enough for them. And an example of that would be a door which can stand in a normal wind. If a normal wind comes along, it won't fall down. That's enough to exempt you from paying if you did that. If you did that, that's all you had to do. If then a hole is developed in the wall or in the door during the night or something, and you didn't know about it, and then the animals escaped and they did damage, so you are exempt because you did the shmiya p'chusa. Now what happens if thieves come and take the animals out? So because they actually took them, they become obligated, they take responsibility over them. And therefore, if the animals do damage, the thieves will be chayev to pay for the damages. And Mishnah also told us that even though putting a door there is enough, if you put the animals out in the hot sun, and that will then agitate them and cause them to break down the door or something, then you're chayev, because you might have done the door, but you left space for the animal to escape because it would get angry, so you didn't really guard it properly. Another example of not guarding it properly is if you give it to someone incompetent, like a deaf mute or something. If you give it to him, then obviously he's not going to guard it properly, so you'll be chayev. But if you give it over to a normal person, let's say you're a shepherd, and even if that shepherd then gives it over to another shepherd, the rule is that whoever is the one responsible for guarding it, he is the one who's obviously going to be chayev. Then the Mishnah told something very important, that even in a case where you'll be potter to pay for damages, for example, if the animal just falls down into a garden, that was out of your control, so you're not obligated to pay for that damage. However, the animal benefited because the animal then ate the food in that garden, which means that the owner of the animal gained because the owner would have had to feed its animal lunch. And now the animal's full. So for that benefit, he has to pay. And how do you pay that? Whatever the owner would have given him, that's how much he has to pay the owner of the garden. Let me have a machlokes about if it does walk into the garden. Let's say it walks into the garden normally. So you'll obviously be chayav to pay for the damages because you should have prevented it from going into the garden. Question is, how do you measure that damage done? According to the Chachamim, we look at the whole field as a whole. Or not the whole field, the whole big area, Beis Sa'ah. And we look at how much that large area has gone down in value because of the damage which the animal did, which is less than the actual damage. Because you're looking at the whole thing. However, Shimon says no, that's not always the case. Because if the fruit which the animal ate, even though it was attached to the ground, but if it was ready to not be attached to the ground, let's say it was fully ripe, it doesn't need the ground, it's not dependent on the ground anymore, and therefore, in that case, contrary to Shimon, you look at the actual fruit or the actual produce which the animal ate, and we don't base it on the field because it's no longer dependent on the field. We then had a similar to Mishnah as one which we had in a previous perek. That is that if you put a stack of grain in someone else's property, and that stack of grain causes damage in some way, so since you weren't allowed to put it in there, so you'll be chayev, but if it's the other way around, so the owner's property or the owner's animals, let's say, damage your grain, then the owner will be potter, because he can say, what are you doing putting your stuff into my property? I'm not taking responsibility for that, and therefore I definitely won't be obligated to pay you if my animals were to do damage to your haystack. Right, that is the end of the Masechta's discussion of Shur, of the category of damage caused by an animal. Now we're going to develop and discuss the category of Eish, which is when damage is caused by fire. And at the end of Perek Vov, we ended the discussion of the four categories of damage. So what do we discuss about Eish? If I have a glowing coal and I give it to an incompetent person, again, and the standard example is a deaf mute, if he then causes something to go on fire because of that, he's not chai because he's incompetent. I'm not chai because it wasn't a direct damage caused by me, and I find potter. However, in Hashem's eyes, I'm still chayev, because it was definitely the wrong thing to do. So even though I might not get a punishment down here, I'm still considered chayev in Hashem's eyes. If on the other hand, I give the burning coal to a normal person, and that normal person causes a fire, who's going to be chayev? He is, because you have a very important rule called Ein Shliach Lidvar Aveira. If I make a messenger and he does the sin, even if he does it on behalf of me, he's the one who's chayev, because he shouldn't be listening to me. Okay, next case. The mission told us that if different people contribute to the fire, the halacha is that whoever does the last thing to cause the fire to grow and cause damage, that's the one who's chayev. And in fact, if the last thing which caused the fire to grow wasn't a human, it was the wind, let's say an unusually strong wind came and blew it, then the wind would be chayev, meaning everyone's potter, because there was another force which caused it to grow and caused the fire to do damage. Another part of this category of fire is someone who singes a field belonging to somebody else, and when he singes it, he now makes the field require another ploughing. So even though it might not really be damage, because the owner now needs to do another ploughing, this person will be chayev to pay for that damage. The mission then brought a five-way machlekes, five different opinions for how far you have to assume that your fire is going to travel, and if it passes a very large distance, or goes over very high things, for example, whether you're chayv for that, whether you're potter, because it was out of your control. A normal fire would not have traveled that far. But according to the first opinion, the Tanakama, the Chachomim, if the fire passes a fence which is 4 amas tall, or if it passes a river which is 8 amas wide, then you're potter, because it shouldn't have passed that. Since it did, that's considered out of your control, and therefore any damage done past that point, you'll be potter for. Second opinion, Rabbi Lozman Azaira holds, even a distance of 137 amas, anything within that will be chayv for. According to Rabbi Eliezer, the cutoff point is 16 amas, because that is the width of a normal public domain. So that's why Rabbi Eliezer holds it 16 amas. According to Rabbi Akiva, it's 50 amas. And finally, Rabbi Shimon says you can't tell us a specific rule for this. It depends on how large the fire is. If it's a massive fire, then maybe it can travel hundreds of amas. If it's small, then maybe you can assume it only goes a few amas, and therefore you have to judge it on each case. If someone sets a stack of grain on fire, and within that stack there are different things hidden, more expensive things hidden within that stack. So according to Rabbi Huda, you have to pay for all the things that you burnt. Tough luck, you might not have known they were in there. It was all illegal what you did anyway, so you have to pay for every damage which you did. However, according to the Chachomim, no, we look at it as if the whole thing was grain. And they learned from the Pasuk, because the Torah compares a haystack to standing grain. So the Chachomim learned, just like standing grain, you can see everything there, so to a haystack, you're only judged for what you can see. So since you saw a haystack, you didn't know there were expensive things within there, so you only have to pay for the haystack, and the things which were within there, we look at them as if it was part of the haystack, and that's all you have to pay. That's when it comes to a haystack, but the Chachomim agree that if he sets fire to a house, in that case, everyone has things in the house, and therefore you know that there are expensive things in the house, and therefore the person who sets the house on fire will be obligated to pay for all the valuables inside there as well. If there's a stack of grain, and tied to that stack is a slave. Now, the punishment for killing a slave is the death penalty. So if you set fire to the slave and the grain at the same time, then you're exempt from paying for the haystack, because of the rule which we've had a couple of times already, kim labor jabomine. If you're chayv two punishments for doing something, then you only receive the harsher punishment, and therefore hey gets killed, so he doesn't have to pay. If you use a hammer to hit things and there are sparks flying out from that hammer and those cause a fire, you're chayev, even though you might consider it indirect, really it is direct, because that's what happens when you bang a hammer. Sparks come out, and therefore you're chayev to pay for the damage. Someone who's walking with his camel, and the camel has lots of flax on its back, and the flax enters a shop as it passes by the shop, and let's say there's a candle inside the shop, it catches fire and sets fire to the whole shop. In that case, the owner of the camel is chayev. Why? Because he put so much flax on the camel's back that of course it was going to go into other people's shops and cause damage, and therefore it's his fault, so it's chayev. However, if the candle is placed outside, then it's the shopkeeper's fault for putting the candle outside. According to Rabbi Huda, very interestingly, you have a reference to Chanukah for one of the only times in Shas where there's a reference to Chanukah here. We would have said that if it was a Chanukah candle, it's a mitzvah to put the Chanukah candle outside, and therefore the shopkeeper will be exempt in that case, because the only reason why he put it outside was because of the mitzvah. Perek Zion began the part 2 of Maseches Bava Kamma. The first 6 parakim discuss the 4 avos and zikim, and now Perek Zion in its entirety discusses the laws of a ganav, someone who steals, and specifically someone who steals secretly. So the basic halacha is that if you steal from someone, when you come to pay back, you don't only have to pay back the actual item, you also have to pay back its value, and that is known as tashlumei chefel, paying double, meaning paying the actual thing back, plus paying its value as well to the owner. And the reason for this is because you tried to make him lose that amount, so as a punishment we say that you have to give him that amount which you tried to make him lose. That's tashlumei chefel. What about tashlumei abo v'chamisha? So that is the halacha, that if you steal an ox or a sheep specifically, and you then slaughter it or you sell it, in that case you have to pay back 4 or 5 times the value. Not just double, but 4 or 5 times. If it's a sheep, you pay 4 times. If it's an ox, you pay 5. The Torah says that these punishments apply if you steal something from the man's house. And we learn from there that if you steal something from another ganav who stole that item or that animal, so you are potter to pay for the extra amount. You just have to pay back the actual item, but you don't have to pay back the extra because of that posuk. Then the Mishnah discussed a bit about Edom Zomim. Edom Zomim are witnesses who testify about something, and then two other witnesses come and say that you can't know what you just said, because at the time of that thing that you said happened, you were with us, and we didn't see that. And we know that you didn't see that either, and therefore you must be lying. That's Edom Zomim. So if two witnesses testify that someone stole an animal, and two other witnesses come and say that he slaughtered it or he sold it, and they're both found to be Edom Zomim, so they're both lying. The punishment, usually for an Ed Zomim, is that he gets the punishment which he tried to give the other person. So in this case, the first pair which said that he stole it, they have to pay back double the value. So they were trying to make him pay Tashlumei Chefel. What about the second pair? The second pair were trying to make it go from 2 to 4 or 5. They were saying he also slaughtered it and or sold it, and therefore they have to pay 2 or 3 times the value, depending whether it's a sheep or an ox, because again, that's what they try to make him pay. If one of the two witnesses becomes invalidated, then the whole witness is invalid, because testimony is only valid if it's said by two witnesses. And in fact, even if the first testimony becomes invalid, even as a result of one person becoming invalidated, then the second testimony is also invalid, because if there's no evidence that he stole it, then you can't get punished for slaughtering or selling the stolen item. That's dependent on him having stolen it. Then we listed a few cases where one is exempt from paying Tashlumei Abor B'Chamisha if he slaughters it on Shabbos or for Avod Zorah. In that case, it's Chayav Misa. He gets the death penalty, so it only gets the harsher punishment. Again, what's that called? Kim Le B'Drabo Mineh. Or if he slaughters or sells it after his father died, which meant that he had partly inherited it, so it was partly his, and therefore he's not going to be a chayev. Or if he made it hektish and then slaughtered or sold it, then he's exempt because it no longer belongs to the original owner. There's like a way of getting out of it. So in that case, he's exempt from paying Tashlumei Abor B'Chamisha. He'll still have to pay Tashlumei Chefel, double, but not 4 or 5 times the amount. If someone steals an animal which is designated for hektish, according to Rabbi Shimon, he's potter from paying either Tashlumei Chefel or Tashlumei Abor B'Chamisha. Because the Torah says only chayev, like we brought before, if you steal from the man's house, the man's property, not from the Bais HaMikdash's property, and therefore you're potter if you steal something from his hektish. So that's according to the Chachamim. According to Rabbi Shimon, it depends, because if the owner didn't specify which animal he would give in his designation, then the thief is chayev, because the owner would have to replace the animal with another animal if it got lost. Because he didn't say, I'll bring this animal, he said, I'll bring a animal. So even if the animal which he was intending to bring dies or is lost, he will have to bring another animal. So stealing that animal is costing the person himself. So it's still like it's stealing from the owner, even though technically it might belong to the Bais HaMikdash, really it belongs to him, because you're causing him to have to buy another animal or use another animal for the korban or to give to the Beit HaMikdash. Another case where you're potter from Tashlumei Abor B'Chamisha is if you don't sell the whole thing. If you leave any part of it which is still edible, an edible part of it unsold, then you're potter. Also, if you originally owned part of it, meaning you owned half this animal in a partnership with someone else. So if you now go sell it, of course that's stealing from the other partner, but you're only stealing half the animal and therefore you're exempt. And furthermore, if you slaughter it, but the slaughtering is not a valid shechita, the animal wouldn't be kosher because you didn't slaughter it correctly. In that case, you're exempt because this whole punishment is only if you actually shecht it properly. The Mishnah then says something very important. The thief is only chayv to pay these fines of Tashlumei Chefel and Tashlumei Abor B'Chamisha if he acquires the item or the animal. Now, how does he acquire it? Either by mashicha, which means pulling or dragging the animal, but that only works if it's outside the owner's domain. It's not sort of such a strong, clear acquisition, so if it's still in the owner's domain, then you can't take it from the owner. If it's outside the owner's domain, then dragging it's enough. Alternatively, he could do hagbor, which is lifting it up, and that would work even in the owner's domain. So why does this all make a difference? Because if the animal dies before he's acquired it, then he's exempt from paying anything, because it's as if the owner's animal died, without the ganav getting involved. So what happens if this ganav doesn't acquire it, but he brings someone else into that property, let's say, and says, come, I'm going to give this to you to watch over, or to borrow, or to keep it maybe, and then the person who he's giving it to acquires it, and the animal dies. So really, who should be chayev here? Whoever acquired it. But the halacha is that the ganav is chayev here. Even though usually we say, ein shliach l'dvar aveira, that if a messenger sins on behalf of someone else, in this case the receiver acquiring it on behalf of the ganav, or even on behalf of himself, but because of the ganav, usually whoever does it will be chayev. But in this case, the receiver didn't know that it was stolen, and therefore it's completely the ganav's fault, and therefore the ganav is the one who is chayev. At the end of the pair, the mission told us that there are 4 types of animals that can't be owned. Number one, sheep and goats in inhabited parts of Eretz Yisrael. They can't be owned because they destroy the vegetation there. Number two, chickens in Yerushalayim or for a kohen in the whole of Eretz Yisrael. And the reason for this is because they spread tumor from dead insects. So they jump around and always come in contact with dead insects, and therefore they can spread tumor across the area, and kohanim have to stay tahar. And also in Yerushalayim, because of the karbonis, we want it to stay tahar. Number three, pigs, because of a story when the earth shook as a result of a pig being sent over the wall of Yerushalayim. Because of that, they decreed that you can't own a pig. And finally, you can't own a violent dog unless it's tied by a chain, because they were very violent in those days. And if a pregnant woman sees the dog not on a chain, it might miscarry. She might miscarry because of her fright. And therefore, if it's not on a chain, you can't own it. And finally, the Mishnah told us that it's forbidden to spread traps for doves near to an inhabited area, because doves fly around and they're probably owned by someone. And then you're coming to trap them, you can't do that unless it's far away, in which case you can assume that it's not owned by anyone. So that concluded Perek Zayin, which discussed the halachos of a ganav. Perek Ches is also a perek of one subject, which takes up just this perek. And that is, if one person injures another person, that's called chayvel. So the halach is, he has to pay for up to five things. Nezek, which is the actual damage, how much his market value was reduced. Sa'ar, which is pain, how much he would have paid not to feel that pain. Ripri, which is all medical costs. Sheves, which is what he would have earned by working during that time that he's healing from his wound. And finally, boishas, for the embarrassment. So firstly, nezek, that was the first one. The Mishnah noted that this is the only payment when it comes to an animal which injures, the owner is only chayav to pay for the market value which goes down. He won't have to pay for the rest of them if it's the animal which did the damage. And also, the Mishnah noted that another exemption of the animal doing damage is tzmei velodos. When a animal causes a woman to miscarry, the animal is exempt, whereas if a man does it, the man will be chayav. Okay, when it comes to ripui, which is the medical costs, that's the third category, the chayvel, the injurer, has a choice. Either you can pay the entire amount, which the doctors estimate it will cost, in one go, or he can pay day to day for that day's costs. If he does the second way, then if something else happens, if there's another health problem as a result of what happened, then he'll have to pay for that as well. Okay, the Mishnah also developed the fourth one, which was sheves, paying for the unemployment. If you injure your Jewish slave, then you're part of paying sheves, obviously, because the work is done for you. The Mishnah then went into quite a lot of detail for the fifth and final thing which he has to pay for, that is boishas, the embarrassment. So how do you measure that? So the more lowly the person who does the embarrassing, and the more important the person who is embarrassed, the higher the payment. Then the Mishnah listed a few specific examples of embarrassing things, and according to the Chachomim, all the following amounts that he has to pay is the maximum, meaning only for a very important person, that's how much you have to do, you have to pay, but for a less important person, you pay less. But according to Rabbi Akiva, everyone pays this amount. What is that amount? So if you punch him, so according to the Chachom, you have to pay a sela, which is half a zuz. According to the Yehuda, in the name of Rabbi Yosef Aglili, it's 100 zuz. That's 200 times as much as the Chachom say. Okay, if you slap him on the cheek, that's much more embarrassing, so you have to pay 100 zuz. Sorry, 200 zuz. If you slap him on the cheek with the back of your hand, it's even more embarrassing, so you have to pay 400 zuz. Also, if you pull his ear, or you pull out his hair, or you spit on him, you take off his outer garment, or you uncover the hair of a woman in public, all these things, you have to pay 400 zuz. Even if someone is not so particular about being embarrassed, if you go ahead and embarrass them, then you're chayv. If someone is unclothed and therefore they're already partly embarrassed, if you embarrass them more, you're chayv because you're adding to their embarrassment. Also, if you embarrass a blind person, even though he can't see, he can still feel the embarrassment. So you're chayv. If you embarrass someone who's asleep, if he realizes when he wakes up what happened, then you're also chayv because you did embarrass him. And then the Mishnah told something very important, and that is that you're only chayv for the boishes, for the embarrassment, if it was intentional. Because that's the example which the Torah brings. We then brought the rule of kimle b'javamine into it again, and that is that you're only chayv the harsher punishment if you'll have two different things. And therefore, if you injure your parents and you don't make a wound, or you injure someone on Yom Kippur, that's punishable by Koris, not by the death penalty of Beis Din. So then you'll be chayv. But if you do cause a wound to your parents, you injure someone on Shabbos, then the punishment is the death penalty, and therefore you're potter from paying. If you injure a non-Jewish slave, then just like you have to pay the five payments for everyone else, so too for him, but according to Rabbi Huda, you don't have to pay for the embarrassment for a non-Jewish slave, because the Torah says that the payment of embarrassment only applies if someone embarrasses his brother, which means his fellow Jew, which excludes a non-Jewish slave. If a cheshet of a cotton, these are incompetent people, if they injure someone, then they're potter. Similarly, if a married woman or a slave injures someone, they're also potter because their husband or their owner has a hold on what they own. They partly own what they own and therefore don't have to pay. But if later they're divorced or the slave is freed, then they'll have to pay for the damage which they did, even though when they did the damage, they were a slave or a married woman.